Eric, man.
Hey, Charles, how are you doing?
Good. What's up? That's a nice chair.
Yes, well, you know, we're here in the executive room today.
Wow.
Yeah, look at that, you know, it's like fancy.
Yeah.
This is usually where the big shots are, but we are today with the big shot.
Yes.
We're with Roger Barja.
Oh, I'm in good company.
Excellent.
Yep, and so we're going to talk today about, you know, some exciting news that Microsoft Research, I think it's Microsoft Research, right?
Yes,
just
Microsoft
announced,
Research,
yeah. Namely that they're, you know, they're releasing Dryad and Dryad Link to the academic community.
Excellent. Now, so for the people out there in the audience who don't know what Dryad is, let's start there. What
yeah,
is it?
Sure. Well, let's ask Roger.
Okay. So Dryad was developed by our Silicon Valley group, Microsoft Research Silicon Valley, Yuan Yu, Michael Izard, Dennis Federling, and John Curry. And this team basically has developed a framework for data parallel programming. If you have a large amount of data that you want to be able to analyze, it makes sense to distribute that data over a large cluster or a large collection of computers, just simply to get disks operating in parallel. But if these jobs are going to run hours, there's going to be failures that are going to occur. How do you restart it? How do you move the computation to the data? And so this is the framework that Dryad provides. It will actually distribute computation over large clusters of machines, provides fault tolerance, load balancing. The users don't need to know anything about parallel or distributed programming. An incredibly powerful tool.
So when you talk about kind of large number of machines, kind of, you know, what number should we think about?
Yeah, so Dryad has been in use in our search lab since 2006, where it's analyzing roughly 10, 12 petabytes of data per night on clusters with up to 3,000 cores, over tens of thousands of servers running every night, hundreds of thousands of processes. It's moving and analyzing a lot of data. And it's also used by researchers inside of Microsoft Research. There's about 100 that are using it for their research projects. So we're talking big data, big computations, large jobs.
Okay, so and so one thing that you said to kind of surprised me a little bit when you said, you know, people, you know, don't have to know anything about distributed programming. Mm-hmm. That kind of sounds a little bit too good to be true. So,
So it's not alike. In fact, if you look at the optimization tricks that they have put in, there are a lot of tricks from parallel databases where, again, we're trying to abstract away the programming where the user just specifies, here's my program with a few declarative statements. We're going to see link arising. And basically, it's the runtime that's going to figure out how to virtualize the job graph. It actually creates a static job graph. And it's then it figures out at runtime how to actually assign the job, move the data to the actual underlying computation, basically binding that virtual graph to the actual runtime. Not unlike what we do with SQL, when we basically write queries. We don't have to realize how many data we're moving from tables. We just write our language, and the runtime figures out how to do it.
Okay, so you're saying, you know, you're lifting the level of abstraction such that the kind of the runtime can do then a lot of the kind of hard work to kind of, you know, optimize the computation under the covers.
Exactly.
So one thing that, you know, before we move kind of, you know, to the link part, which kind of really excites me very much, you know, that's been my dream
really?
To have a parallel a link, you know, that runs like on massively parallel machines for a long time, but just that kind of to kind of drill down a little bit more on the Dryad part.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that, you know, when you're, and you mentioned this already, when you're dealing with like these big computations, is how to deal with failure, right? Because, you know,
yes.
If you have 10,000 machines, there will always be a couple that kind of, you know, that you know, are down or, you know, catch fire or things like that, you know, disasters like that. So how does Dryad deal with those?
Okay. So really, when a Dryad job is running on a cluster, there's actually a job manager, which is actually watching an instantiation of one of the vertices. Because, you know, a Dryad job is a graph. A vertice is the work that's being done, and the channel or the line between the vertices is the data that's being passed between. So the job manager is actually monitoring the health of an individual job. If it notices that there's not getting heartbeats from the job, it actually can start up another instantiation of it, moving the required inputs from the previous run or the previous nodes in the graph to the recovered graph. Even if channels fail, it can recover from that. And the programmer can even say, I want 5 copies of a particular vertice running because it's subject to failure. I'll take the first one. They can specify policies, which, again, this is what makes it such a much more richer framework than what we've seen out there before.
And so, like each computation at the nodes, how do you specify that? So is there, you know, is that C++ or .NET or
any .NET? We're going to transition over now to talking about Dryad Link, the link aspect of it, where really it's our link query that's basically being distributed. And the Dryad runtime will actually has its own implementation for some of the link operators for performance reasons, for optimization reasons. And in fact, in some cases, it will actually take a pipeline of operators, a series of operators for the link query, put them together in what's called a supernode, and that's what it's scheduling to run on an individual node. And in some cases, to glue things back together, it injects its own operators to basically merge data sets coming from different nodes. So that's what's being scheduled. At the lowest level, it's an individual link operator. The highest level, it's actually a pipeline that's been compiled down into a super vertice.
No, that's very interesting. So how do you, how do they determine kind of which operators to combine? I mean, I know that link to objects does in 3.3.0 or was it 3.5? Mm-hmm. We added some kind of optimizations to link to objects that when you're kind of combining a select with a filter, that the underlying implementation then knows, oh, I don't need to kind of introduce an intermediate value there.
Yeah, but I think
Is it similar to that?
I think they've done many of the same tricks. And there's actually a wonderful website that the Dryad link team have put together off the MSR website that actually shows all the optimizations, published papers talking about this. And that's been the exciting thing, is the community, the external community, has known about Dryad and Dryad Link for some time. They simply haven't been able to get access to it. And that's really what the big announcement is, that our team stepped in. And it wasn't just our team, it was in a collaboration. The Silicon Valley team, Microsoft Research Silicon Valley team, collaborated with us. The HPC team, John Vert, the architect on HPC, collaborated with us. The MSR shared infrastructure team allowed us to use clusters during this testing. And a whole bunch of researchers, MSR researchers from around the company that are using Dryad, actually offered to dog food the release that we're building for the academic community. And my team helped actually build it. So we actually ported it all together as a team, actually did the port from Dryad and Dryad Link running on Cosmos over to the HPCS clusters, because we know our universities and academic partners are running HPCS clusters. And that's really what's being released now, with everybody collaborating. Not only that, but we have like programming manuals, programming samples. I mean, it's a starter kit. We've given it to people, and within a half hour, they've been up and running, writing their first program, analyzing large amounts of data.
So that's an interesting thing. So can you explain a little bit more, kind of what do I need to kind of run whole package?
Sure. So we provide a client installer and a cluster installer software, an MSI installer right out of the box. If you're already running HPCS clusters, you're going to have the system running in about a half hour if you take your time setting it up, because the installer will install it on your client monitoring tools. It'll install it on the cluster, and you have some Hello World examples to get you up and running within a few minutes. And, we've had some alpha partners in academic community, like Indiana University, University of Washington. They've been using it now for 2-3 months. As we give the drops, early drops, and what we thought were stable builds, they've actually published 3 papers already on problems they couldn't tackle before. And some of the very early proponents are people who are keen to use Hadoop and MapReduce, such as Randy Bryan at CMU, are actually asking when they can get initial drops of this, because they've played with MapReduce, they've played with Hadoop, they realize the limitations, they've seen Dryad and understand the power it offers. And so we're going to see a wide adoption, I think, in the academic community, and papers that come out of it, and just basically buzz for the platform.
That's nice. But before we kind of go there, I just kind of want to kind of as a developer, I like to kind of a little bit more about the experience. So when I'm kind of say I'm writing a link query, a Dryad link query, and I want to run it, what is kind of the programming model? Do I first run it on my local machine for debugging with a small data set?
So it can run on a single machine, so you can actually test it. You could even actually, we've even doing testing in our lab, we set virtual machines on a Windows 2008 server, so we're basically running HPCS as a virtual system on our machine, just to see their job get distributed, get used to actually partitioning the data and watch the job graph unfold. But now it's time to run it large. Well, all you have to be able to do is basically specify the HPC scheduler, what the head node is for scheduling. You rerun your job after specifying in a file the head node. You then distribute your data over the first set of nodes, kind of partition the data for the first pass. After that, the Dryad jobs, you see the HPC schedule, and you have all the familiar HPC monitoring tools. You see your jobs actually instantiating, picking up those first data sets and starting to unfold the job graph. We even built a tool that actually shows a dynamic version of the job graph, so you can see the Dryad job graph progressing and seeing the HPC nodes come online as they're actually picking up the execution for the job graph.
Okay, so that is, I think, very kind of important, because when you're doing these kind of things, right, being able to visualize actually kind of, you know, what, how the computation kind of, you know, unfolds and kind of folds back. Mm-hmm. So one of the things, if you look at you know, MapReduce style, mm-hmm. is that in when you're doing the reduce part, you know, when you're going from the map part to the reduce part, you have to kind of repartition your data and redistribute.
Yes.
And so there, often there's a lot of kind of heuristics, because, you know, usually the initial input, it's kind of, you know, naturally partitioned. But now, how do you kind of, you know, move to this next step? Is there anything that you guys have to kind of, you know, help, you know, do those kind of things?
Not at this point. I believe there's an opportunity to add policies for distributing the data based on the workload, based on the skew of the data. But now you're starting to cross into an area where really the experts on DryadLink could probably tell us more about that. We've been on this project now for about 5 or 6 months when we saw the opportunity to try to take on all the buzz around Hadoop and try to provide a more powerful tool. But we've got still learning basically about the framework.
And so when you're talking about Link, mm-hmm. so one of the things is that, you know, we have many kind of, you know, implementations of Link mm-hmm. around.
Yeah.
And for example, you know, at the leaf nodes, do you kind of, you know, leverage things like plink or, you know, link to SQL or link to entities, you know?
Yeah, that's a great question, because when we were first running it, when we first started turning the monitoring on, we were surprised at basically on our quad core machines that we weren't seeing faster throughput. We realized the utilization of the cores was basically not 100%. Sure enough, we turned P-Link on, and in fact, because they're composable, we actually, in fact, see 100% utilization now in the cores when P-Link is turned on. We turned Link to SQL, and in fact, some of the data is on SQL, and we actually showed for a Sky Server query where the data is in SQL, and it's a multi-way join to run the query. We can actually pull it out with Dryad Link, with Link to SQL to pull it out of the database, actually run it on hundreds of nodes and get an answer within a few minutes, what would have taken actually about 20 minutes or 30 minutes to run with the SQL query.
Yeah, so this is a kind of fascinating thing, and I think this is a kind of real power of Link, right, that it's fully composable, and that you're taking this Link query, you're breaking it up in subparts where recursively the kind of, you know, those operators themselves are composed of other Link queries that run on a kind of different flavor of Link.
Oh, yeah, and it's acceptance in the academic community. When we're talking at labs about, yes, we know you have your database and your own custom database, but you know Link, you should be able to write your own provider of Link to whatever you're storing data, TerraGrid, whatever database system, on their eyes light up, and they're like, yeah, we can do that. We can then couple this up to where our data is stored without having to go buy something. We can roll our own. So that's great.
Yeah. So of course, you know, makes my heart glow, right, when I hear that, you know, kind of academics are, you know, enthusiastic about Link.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's kind of where it ultimately came from. I mean, this really kind of, you know, taking stuff deeply, you know, deep academic research that we kind of moved in the product, and it's kind of nice to kind of see the circle of life, you know, kind of, you know, now fertilizing, you know, kind of different research.
And you're familiar with the area. I mean, you know the options out there. You have Pig, you know, from Yahoo. You have Sawzall. These are really SQL variants. If you're a SQL person, you understand them. They're not composable. If you understand Link and you've been playing with Link, you can certainly find good books on Link published right now. You can immediately become dangerous with Dryad Link and start processing it. You don't have that same experience when you're trying to use Pig and Sawzall and these other tools that are being built on MapReduce. So I think it's going to be a big advantage for us in the adoption of this technology.
So one of the kind of other things that, you know, I think you're talking about, like, you know, languages and so on. Mm-hmm. So one of the nice things about Link is that it's in some sense language independent. You know, C# and VB have, you know, query syntax for it, and F#. Yeah. You know, has also their kind of, you know, query operator. So do you see kind of people like adopting F#
yes.
or C# or?
So F# in the scientific community is getting a lot of traction, to the point when we released our release that came out this week has examples in Visual Basic and, of course, F# as well, because we see a lot of programmers adopting F# for their their scientific computations. So we had to have examples of Dryad Link and F#.
Yeah. So yeah, that's you know, we you know, we mentioned, it like seems like every kind of, you know, episode we mention F# here.
Yeah.
But now F#, unlike the other two languages that you just mentioned, it has asynchronous workflows. It has more of an asynchronous concurrent programming model built into the very language, right?
Well, in
the libraries.
I think F# in that sense, if you look at the asynchronous workflows, they are an example. They are very similar to Link. query comprehensions, right? So it is like special syntax that you can kind of overload so you can give your own implementations.
Okay.
And that's kind of, you know, the way, you know, why F-sharp is very powerful. And because they kind of took this idea of, you know, of kind of link queries and kind of, you know, stretched it kind of, you know, really, really far.
Cool. So now I also heard that you mentioned, just briefly, because I hear a lot of this. I mean, we are Microsoft and we compete.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is a lot of people are using Hadoop,
yep.
right? They're pretty well adopted.
Yes.
It's a respected solution to this problem. But I want to know exactly when you say the weaknesses in Hadoop and what we offer. Can you be more
sure.
specific?
Sure, be happy to. And in fact, you're going to find why, while Hadoop has been accepted and used, it's not necessarily well-loved. And this is something we came out, we realized there was an opportunity here to actually come up with a better technology in MSR and actually provide it to researchers and actually fill a need. So you say, well, what's different about it? Mm-hmm. Well, just as Eric said earlier, you have map, reduce, and sort. Those are your two fundamental operators, and that's your programming model for it. With Dryad and Dryad Link, your programming model is you're actually writing a regular link program. What it compiles down to is a graph. That graph is virtualized. You can add policies for fault tolerance, for distribution. You can basically plug in your own policies. In fact, if you saw new opportunities for distributing data because you understood the skew of the data. It's a very extensible platform. And again, you're producing a very general DAG. And the gyrations people have to go through to actually map reduce, whenever they're trying to do graph analysis or something very rich, Dryad Link handles that very naturally. So if you're doing social graph analysis, it will just compile down into a graph analysis program.
So one of the things that's kind of, you know, hard if you look at the classic MapReduce programming model is that if you have multiple things, so you have to kind of break up your program in a map phase and a reduce phase, but sometimes you have like a pipeline, right, where you have multiple phases. So does Dryad Link kind of, you know, compile queries into, you know, like, you know, multiple, you know, MapReduce stages?
Yes, it does. And it can actually streamline pipelines. And again, the literature that the Dryad guys and the Dryad Link team has put together on the web in their talks actually show where MapReduce is actually a simplification. It's an instance of the Dryad framework. And they show how they can actually compile programs to implement MapReduce and much more general pipelines, much more deep pipelines with a few exchanges of information. And then again, one run long-running deep pipeline.
So one of the things, you know, that if you now I'm going to try to kind of, you know, take the un-Charles question. So one of the things that I like about Hadoop is the fact, for example, that you can use shell scripts and, you know, Unix pipes to kind of, you know, so it's like a very kind of different, you can either use Java, but, you know, they also have like the kind of complete opposite where you can do, you know, like a very scripty approach.
Sure.
Is that something that you guys support as well?
We don't support it now, but you could easily imagine. So the next thing the team is going to do, so we have the Dryad Link interface to it, but we also have the whole Dryad API.
Yes.
Such that if you wanted to implement a custom interface to Dryad, we're going to be next testing the whole Dryad API, cleaning up the code, and our next release is going to be support for the full Dryad API after full testing has been done. I mean, it's a great platform, but it was a research platform. So what we're trying to offer is robust testing at test runners for the full API, and the team is then very open to provide that for other people to think about new implementations, scripting, pipelining, streaming, all this stuff will be
okay,
on the table.
Okay, that's cool. So I mean, like, for example, right, imagine that you got PowerShell, right?
Yes.
PowerShell, that seems to be like an ideal thing to kind
that would
of
be awesome.
Yeah,
use for kind of gluing these jobs together.
Yep. And again, this is the stuff, the innovation we expect to happen in the academic research community. We just have to give the tools. We actually have a community site where researchers are going to be uploading their algorithms that they've implemented in Dryad Link. We expect once we offer the full Dryad API and a, you know, binary download, we'll see people building tools on top of that and putting them into our community site as well.
So can you explain a little bit more how, you know, that community site works? So is that...
So we're using Microsoft Connect. We have a MSR LA license right now, which basically allows the researchers to download the tool, use it for academic research license. Microsoft owns none of the IP over what they do with it as long as it's for research use. We have another community site, we'll Connect, where basically researchers can upload their ideas, their example programs. We've actually got a library right now of 100 sample codes. We're going to continue to harvest over the next year other researchers' use of Dryad and Link and put it up on this community site to generate community. I mean, this is really what's going to differentiate what Hadoop and other offerings out there is that we have a team that's going to stand up behind it and actually continue to innovate on it. The Dryad team is going to continue to check their research extensions into our branch, which we release to the web. Mm-hmm. So basically, as they continue to innovate on it, people are going to get fresh drops of what gets built.
And so, is it in what language is everything written?
A combination of languages. I mean, so the actual underlying Dryad and Dryad Link is managed code. Hmm. But again, we've got examples of programs, machine learning, graph analysis, website analysis. You know, we have some physics examples. We have astronomy examples from LSST, all written in whatever managed code that we have out there in Visual Studio. Most of it's C sharp.
Okay.
But we see a few cases of F sharp and Visual Basic.
Hmm. And another thing is are you providing example data sets and things like that? I mean, you mentioned the kind of the Sky Server.
Yeah. So we are, and I don't have my bag here right now. What I'd show you is we actually have a whole tutorial that's been published. It's downloadable off the web with code samples that actually work. And there's a public URL people can go to get started on this. So it's much more than just a binary download. There's, again, tutorials, programming samples.
And so rather than flashing on the screen, because I'm old school, I'm just going to say into the camera, we will have this posted on the post, Niners,
Great. All
these URLs.
Great.
Right.
Yep. You mentioned what you see in the future. So one of the things of course, is that there's a lot of other kind of distributed computing resources that Microsoft offers, right? Like Azure and SQL Azure and so on.
Yeah.
Do you envision that at some point will that kind of move in that area or?
That now you're getting to a subject close to my heart. I'm actually going to be changing roles in the company, moving from external research, building tools from researchers, moving over to the Cloud Computing Futures Group.
Awesome.
Where we're going to be basically looking at
it's like extreme computing, is that right?
No.
It's like, oh man, I'm jealous.
Why are
it's
you
like,
doing that?
Yeah, it's like,
Just the time I was interviewing, they're announcing the change in the name, and I just thought this is the right place to be. I'll still be collaborating with my friends in external research. But we're looking at how you can take Azure and make it a platform for data-intensive, compute-intensive research at scale, tackling problems which basically can't be tackled today. And Dryad, we're going to be moving Dryad onto Azure so that basically people who don't even have access to a cluster are going to be able to write their programs and actually take advantage of the Azure compute platform for doing big data analysis jobs.
Wow.
That's fair. So how did you land that job? Let's kind of take it a little bit more personal.
A lot of it is very consistent with the mission Tony Hay has been leading ever since I joined Tony when he joined the company 3 years ago. How can we build tools and from Microsoft platform for researchers? How can we leverage Microsoft research assets like Dryad and Dryad Link? And this is just an extension of it, except it's much more focused, and Dan Reed's leading the cloud computing efforts. So it's really an extension of what my passion was and what my interest was working with Tony, but now just focusing on the cloud. So it's just a natural path for me to take.
Yeah, wow, that's... And Burton Smith, it's like also there. It's like they have a lot of kind of really kind of, super bright people.
I'm going to be like a sponge. I'll tell you, I'm just going to just open my brain and be a sponge for the next few years. I mean, Azure's changing. Our whole compute environment's changing as applications move to the cloud. New challenges, data management, load balancing, even the fundamental architectures, computer architectures, up in the air again about how to redesign it. What a great time to be in this stuff.
So I have one question, because a lot of stuff, and we've had this conversation with the other concurrency folks about the general purpose computing problem. Eric alluded to earlier in his question that you're really focusing on research. But I want to bring it down to the client now and talk a little bit more about, if you have a client with 100,000 cores, and assume you solve the caching problem, this could also be useful on the client, right?
Oh, you bet.
This technology.
You bet. And this is what we get from playing with the scientists. They'll let us play with their data. They'll let us engage with us on challenging problems. But what we learn can be turned right around and applied to business. Financial analysts trying to analyze trends in data, trends in stock, interactions between economies and markets. Basically, they're collecting data, and they don't really know what to do with it. We can actually do this investigation with scientists, republish the white papers, perfect our tools, have interactions with product groups, and there's a really virtuous cycle here. You can expect these ideas to surface. And don't be surprised if you see Dryad and Dryad Link on HPCS as a product in a few years down the road, because we're going to pioneer it here with our research communities.
So, and Charles and I have kind of, this is like another recurring question, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yes, we often talk about the cloud and so on, where, the computation is kind of, far out in some sense. But, again, let me ask the question differently that Charles asked you. When, on your client, when there's like enormous computing power on the client, That must be exciting too, right? That you know that it opens up, you know, a lot of kind of, you know, capabilities to kind of directly benefit the user that's interacting with that PC.
Yeah. So I mean, so we just gave a tutorial today at the faculty summit here, Dennis Gannon, Wei Liu, and myself. And what we showed is that basically the client is Excel. And so many researchers are using Excel as their front end. Excel's increasing its capability to handle large numbers, large row sets. New visualization tools are coming into it. So when the user's interacting with Azure in our demos, they're really playing with Excel. And when we have a new button that basically it will actually call the computation up on Azure, move a subset of your spreadsheet up to Azure table where the computation wakes up, runs a computational model you simply could not run on your desktop, but the big visualization and analysis toolkit that you have in Excel or maybe even MATLAB is taking place on your desktop. And we make that seamless. When we showed that demo, the people in the audience were like, oh, that's cool. You know, we were showing other big heavyweight applications, but again, people are very comfortable with having very powerful tools on their desktop for that personal intimate analysis of the data. Mm-hmm. But the big models, maybe even reference data sets, you know, 20 years of market data or environmental data, lives in the cloud. But the real stuff's happening on your desktop.
Yeah. And so how do you kind of, you know, envision, you know, if you're looking there, like, you know, there's, I mean, in some sense, the world is getting, you know, for the programmers, it's getting more complicated, right? Because now you have to kind of think about how do I kind of distribute my computation? How do I distribute my data across tiers?
Yeah.
Are you guys thinking in your new team about problems like that?
Yeah, indeed. So Jim Laris is leading a team of researchers who are looking at new programming models. How can we simplify the whole challenge of actually programming to the cloud? Because as you said, you have to learn a lot. You have to think carefully about distributing your work, distributing your data. You have to be too aware of how computation is being spread across the cloud. But we can expect that to change. That's just got to change, right? I mean, look what Link has done and how we interact with databases and think what cloud programming is going to be like in a few years.
But the only thing that I would say to that is that latency is a physics problem.
Latency, right? Sure.
I mean, sure. So if you throw up this big computation to happen in the cloud, as a programmer, you really don't have any way to reason about when the computation returns, when it actually ends. But that can lead to another question, and Eric alluded to this as well. One of the things I always thought was that debugging highly distributed concurrent systems was really hard.
Yeah.
Well, how is it not hard in this setting?
Well, I mean, that was the reason I asked this question. Yeah. So one of the things, and you know, it's like in this particular case where the computation is in some sense well structured, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a graph.
Yes.
And so now you can kind of visualize that and reason about that. And so it becomes like less unstructured, okay, right? So, and I think that's kind of key probably to the ability to debug. And the fact that there's this abstraction where you're programming at a higher level of abstraction, and then you can trust the tools.
So you don't have the kind of insane, threaded, interleaving insanity?
That's exactly right. I mean, when you look at Dryad Link, it's really just scheduling chunks of work in channels and actually then staging the work through a very controlled execution. No timing issues to deal with. You having distributed systems or all the problems can arise. So it's a very controlled environment.
Awesome. So one of the things there, and this is kind of my favorite topic, is that, you know, one of the assumptions you make when you do that, and you know that's kind of one of the truly the weaknesses of Link, is that if you're performing any side effects, you know, unintended side effects in your query, you know, then your life gets hard.
Yeah.
So is you know, are you guys looking at other, and F-sharp is already kind of, you know, taking, you know, a step in the right direction by making kind of, you know, immutable by default.
Right.
Are you guys kind of looking at, you know, like radical new computational models?
So certainly not in external research, but perhaps in the cloud computing futures team, but I really haven't seen that work yet. Still too early.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like an awesome team.
Yeah.
It's great.
All right. Well,
great. This could be, yeah. I mean, or is this really going to be our shortest expert to expert ever?
How long do these usually go on?
Amazing. They usually go on. Our last one was an hour and 13 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
But, I mean, I think this is the first time I've ever really heard about Dryad. I mean,
yes.
I've heard the name over and over again.
Yeah.
I hear Hadoop.
Yep.
And then I hear it.
Yep.
So this is nice to know really what's going on.
Yeah, and I think, you know, here in this case, I really think, you know, what I want, you know, this should be the teaser, right? I mean, I want people to kind of, you know, don't watch these kind of, you know, guys here.
Go
download it. That's
absolutely.
Kind of, like, we need to kind of leave them time to play.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, this is like, I mean, I cannot wait to go back to my office and get, you know, download it. Yeah. It's
excellent.
It's
yeah, I mean, the enthusiasm in the community is so, I mean, incredible. And the challenges these people have to deal with large data, they've read about this technology, and if you're struggling with Hadoop and you can read these talks, you can read these papers, you know there's this cool tool out there, but you can't have it, So the demand we've had for it, I have an email queue of people basically saying, please send it to me. We've had a Dryad release email alias now for a couple of months, and the number of requests coming in there for people trying to get their hands on it has just been incredible.
Now, one question I would have, just because when we want people to move from one technology to another, we have to have some sort of bridge, right? And you already mentioned there is sort of an interoperability experience or possibility between Hadoop and Dryad. The other thing I would ask is, what if I'm not a managed programmer and I don't want to program in .NET or I don't want to use F#? Can I still use your facilities?
Oh, well, you could actually just program against the Dryad API when it's available, but not today. Right now you want to use Dryad Link.
Cool.
Your life will be much easier.
Absolutely. And this CLR and managed code is pretty cool stuff.
That's the way to go.
Yeah. You know, Charles, what happened to you?
No, what do you mean?
Well, I think, you know, saying that, I think it would be cool to have something like, you know, link-like facilities for unmanaged code as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, now we're starting a completely new kind of
interaction.
But that's fine.
Native developers.
Native developers. Because, you know, that's as you say, it's like, you know, we tend to kind of forget them a little bit when we're doing all this cool stuff. But, you know, there's a lot of kind of, you know, also kind of libraries, kind of existing libraries in the scientific community written in unmanaged code, maybe even like older stuff than C++, Fortran and things like that. And probably these guys are dying too to kind of, you know...
You can't solve all the problems in the world at once.
That would be a great marketing slogan. You can solve all the problems in the world concurrently in a highly distributed, reliable fashion that's debuggable.
It sounds like an IBM slogan.
But here's one thought, right? Even if you look at the kind of, you know, unmanaged code, so that is the beauty about Link in some sense, and about, like, you know, Dryad Link, is that really what Link does, it's more you're using Link as a kind of a scripting language. It's a glue in which you kind of describe the concurrent computation. But what happens kind of, you know, at the leaves, you know, that is not, that's kind of outside Link, right? And you know, you can interop at that level. You know, I assume that, you know, that Dryad can call kind of arbitrary code, so it can call unmanaged code. So you're really using Link or C# or F# as a scripting language, as a glue. So, you know, I do believe that we're not really kind of, you know, leaving the kind of native programmers out in the cold.
Interesting.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, hey, great to have you on.
It's great.
Been a long time.
Yep.
I've never seen you, actually.
And, you know, you're going to put all the links.
Links are going to be on there. I mean, if I was somebody who could actually edit, maybe they'd pop up in the screen. But, of course, we'd have to have a player where you click and it would actually launch. But you can do that with Silverlight.
Cool.
Who knows what could happen in the future on Channel 9.
And we would ask that as people start playing with this and writing cool algorithms in it, please upload them to the site. We want to see your examples of how you use the technology. We want your feedback. Let's make this great.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Well, I'm going back to my office and play with it.
Excellent.